I'd like now to welcome Edna Riley. She's an independent insurance broker, and she's here to talk about the Affordable Care Act. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hi, how are you?
It's great to have you on, and this is a subject, I mean, we don't usually do things like this on the Radio Cafe, but I think it's on so many people's mind right now. There have been huge changes that the Affordable Care Act brings to health insurance, to options that are and aren't available, to people, to small businesses. How has the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, changed the way health insurance is being bought and sold?
Oh, it's completely changed it. Everything has changed. You know, the first question used to be, particularly for individuals, it used to be, what's your medical health like? Because you couldn't get it if you had some sort of chronic illness or were on some sort of expensive prescription. They would just decline your application immediately. Now they can't do that. It's all guaranteed issue. So I don't know if it's unfortunate or fortunate. You know, now the first question is, how much money do you make? Which is, it's almost as awkward as what's your medical condition.
Now, can they charge you more depending on your medical condition?
No.
So they can only charge you more depending on how much you make?
No, that's not correct either. The income level has to do with how you obtain your health insurance. And again, this is relating primarily to people who are individuals. If you're employed by an employer that's large enough that provides employee benefits, health insurance and other kinds of employee benefits, this doesn't really apply to you. This applies to the self-employed or the, I don't want to say unemployed, but, you know, people who are making their own way. And there's a lot of us in Santa Fe. I'm one of them. I'm self-employed. And the reason that the income question is important is because it determines initially where you go to find your health insurance. There are basically three choices. The first choice is you are eligible for Medicaid if you're low enough income. And that limit has been raised, so if you thought you were low enough before and you applied and you were denied, you should apply again. The second way is to go through the marketplace, which right now for New Mexico is you're buying through the marketplace that's at the federal level, not the state level. The state level is only handling small businesses at this point. The reason to go through the federal government marketplace, it's called the FFM, is that's how you can obtain a subsidy to help you pay for not only your health insurance, but in some cases you can get help with the health care costs as well. Again, that's all dependent on your income level. And then the third way is you can still purchase from Blue Cross Blue Shield or Presbyterian or the carrier that's offering individual insurance of your choice directly. Really, the only reason to go through the FFM would be if you're eligible for a subsidy. If you're not eligible for a subsidy, there's really no point in going through the government bureaucracy, really, is what it is.
Because they charge you the same either way?
It's the same, yeah. For example, Presbyterian, all of the insurance companies have had to revamp what they're offering in order to meet the federal guidelines of the Affordable Care Act. So, for example, Presbyterian came out with 12 individual plans, and they're exactly the same on-exchange or off-exchange. The only difference in premium relates to how old you are. There's no medical underwriting at all. The application that used to be 12 pages is now about 4 pages.
So what's working better and what is not working so well? I mean, the fact that they can't deny you insurance on the basis of existing medical conditions is a beautiful thing.
It really is.
So that's the good part.
Exactly. The way that I phrase it to people is, you know, you can have AIDS, you can have polio, and you could be in an iron lung, you can be in a wheelchair, and you can still pretty much purchase whatever plan you want. That's the upside. The downside is there's pretty much nothing affordable in the Affordable Care Act. You know, it's a little bit of a two-edged sword. The benefits have been decreased to a certain extent. On the other hand, it's become more insurance, which is, that's kind of the good and bad part in and of itself, that issue right there. I think it's important for people to understand insurance and for people to understand that insurance is not healthcare. Insurance is how you pay for healthcare, and you don't have to do any of this if you have the cash to pay the penalty and to pay for your healthcare. But most of us don't have that. So what's happened in the marketplace, at least, and when I say the marketplace, I mean the general industry, to me is it makes the product more what it is. Instead of thinking, oh, well, this is going to pay for all my doctor bills, it isn't going to pay for all your doctor bills.
I mean, I was looking at the site last night trying to figure out how this is working. And first of all, there is a deep mystery to me, which is why are there gold, silver, and bronze plans as if it were the Olympics? Why shouldn't every American have the same plan? If you have cancer, diabetes, heart disease, a broken foot, or chronic headaches, why should one person have different care than the next person?
Well, that's a really good point. I agree with that. Part of the reason is, like I said, it's a product, and people want different things. There are many people in Santa Fe who don't want that level of care.
Until they get sick.
Well, exactly. That's why the legislation was passed. But for a lot of people, they like acupuncture, they like chiropractic, they like the herbal medicine. And this product is not going to pay for that. What it will pay for is if you break your leg and you end up in the hospital. If you have some sort of mysterious something going on and you need help figuring out what it is.
If, God forbid, you're in a terrible accident,
well,
which can't be solved by acupuncture.
Right. And, you know, that's why I think it's an important distinction to remember that this is health insurance. You're not going to see the benefits across the board every time you need care. You're going to see it when you have something catastrophic happen. Even if you're getting a plan that has, you know, the nice little copays and all that stuff, you're ending up paying for it up front. Nothing's free except maybe Medicaid, and that's not free either for us as a society.
Well, one of the things that is, I mean, maybe this is nothing new, but the out-of-pocket maximums are extremely high.
Yeah.
For all the plans. I could personally end up paying $6,000 a year if, well, I had some terrible disease. I mean, I can't even count how many paychecks that is.
Part of what's happened in the last 6 months is all of the plans, or many of the plans, the majority of the plans have the $6,350 limit, out-of-pocket maximum limit. That's all that's being offered, with a few exceptions in New Mexico. In other words, Presbyterian's individual plans, every plan is the $6,350 out-of-pocket maximum. There's varied deductible levels, but the out-of-pocket maximum is all the same. The figure of $6,350 is the maximum allowed by the Affordable Care Act. And most of the carriers have decided, yeah, that's where we're going.
And that is, as you say, not affordable for most people who are working for a living.
Right. You know, if you're reasonably healthy, you're never going to see that figure. That's why eating right and exercising and all of that stuff is really important, because you don't want to get in a situation where you have to come up with that kind of money.
Right, but I mean, that's what health insurance is for. Some percentage of us are, no matter how well we eat, going to get sick or be in an accident.
Exactly. And part of the other issue, too, is, for example, the hospital, St. Vincent's Hospital, is now requiring your deductible up front if you're going in for something that's non-emergency.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
We're talking
it's
to
not, it's not pretty.
We're talking to Edna Riley, independent insurance broker, about the Affordable Care Act. Now, there is something called open enrollment, which ends at the end of this month. What is that?
Well, the way that the system has been revised, especially, again, on the individual side, this does not apply to employers who are purchasing for their employees. This is only self-employed or underemployed or whatever you want to call it, people who work for businesses that don't offer health insurance, in other words, the individual market. Everybody has to sign up or have something by March 31st. That is the deadline.
What happens if you don't?
There is a penalty written into the legislation, which will be reconciled on your tax return for 2014, which is filed in 2015. That's also the way the subsidies are going to be reconciled, is on your 1040 form next year. And I just want to make the point that a lot of people are thinking, oh, well, you know, the first year the penalty is $95, so I'm going to skip it. That's not the case at all. The penalty is $95 or 1% of your income, which can turn into a significant chunk of change.
So if you make $30,000, that's $300.
I look at it the other way. If you're making more than $9,500, your penalty will be higher. And that's within a year.
So it's whichever of those two things is higher, the 1% or $95.
Correct. So, and by the way, if you're only making $9,500, you'll probably qualify for Medicaid anyway. Because I'm not a Medicaid expert, but it seems like the cutoff point is $1,400 a month or $16,800 a year to qualify as an adult for Medicaid.
So what are you seeing in your own practice as an insurance agent?
Well, the last 6 months have been kind of terrible. I didn't get a lot of the information that I needed to make informed decisions with my clients until about the middle of December. And the system itself was not functioning until about the same time. Really, the first, second week of December was the only time we could get online consistently to figure out how it worked, what's available, what's going on. But, you know, it wasn't only the federal governments, but the individual insurance carriers, in particular Blue Cross Blue Shield, didn't make information available about what plans are being offered on the exchange, what plans are being offered off the exchange, how much do they cost. All of that information didn't come until very, very late. The federal system, for a while, was telling New Mexicans to call Be Well New Mexico, even though Be Well New Mexico will not be selling individual insurance plans until next year. This year, we're the only state that has a hybrid exchange. Individuals go to the feds, businesses go to the state. And the feds didn't even know that, and so they were directing people. It was like a horrible circle.
Right.
It's gotten a lot better. But the changes that have been made of what product is available in New Mexico is a little bit horrifying. Again, especially if you're looking for health care and not health insurance, it's fine if you're healthy and you just want to have a plan in case, you know, you break your leg or something. If you have a chronic illness, it's a little bit intimidating. You know,
because basically, if you have a chronic illness which affects your ability to work, you still have to come up with $6,000 a year on top of your insurance premium.
Right. I mean, the way the Affordable Care Act defined affordable, and this was known years ago when it was first talked about, the definition of affordable is 9.5% of your income. Nearly 10% of your income is what each American is supposed to have access to.
Handy, right.
Right, to pay for health insurance. I think that figure is outrageous. It should maximum be 4 or 5%.
Now, if somebody is getting a subsidy, like maybe their health insurance would cost $400 a month, but they qualify for a subsidy, mm-hmm. First of all, do they have a choice among the plans that everybody else has the choice of?
Oh, sure. Well, there are slight differences between plans that are on the exchange and off the exchange, but they're so slight, they're really not even worth mentioning. There are 49 plans available to buy for individuals in New Mexico. Now, sorting through those plans, I would not attempt it without a professional, to be honest, because, again, the materials that were released were not very well written. And so you really need somebody who has experience with the product in order to figure out what does it mean? Is it written correctly? There are some things that are just not written correctly out in the marketplace.
And then the other part of the question is, when people qualify for a subsidy, let's say you're making the Santa Fe city and county minimum wage or living wage, that's still not a lot of money. You get that wage, you're still taxed on it. What you bring home is very little, ultimately. Do you still have to pay the $6,000 out of pocket if you're sick?
It depends on where you fall in the income level. Some people are getting just a break on the premium, and I will say that the subsidies are very generous. If you're the typical Santa Fean working 3 or 4 part-time jobs and you just don't have a lot of money, you should definitely look into getting a subsidy because that's the part that makes it affordable for middle-class Americans. There are a very nice range of plans. 49 plans is a lot to choose from. There's a number of carriers you can choose from. That portion of it is pretty generous. But yes, if something catastrophic happens, pretty much any hospitalization, you're going to have to come up with the $6,350. Again, depending on your income. For those on the lower end of the spectrum of the income, there are additional benefits. The only way I can explain it is you sign up on the exchange and then you get a plan that's better than what you signed up for, basically, is what happens. You end up getting a lower deductible. You may end up getting a lower out-of-pocket maximum. I have no way as an insurance broker of saying, yes, this is what's going to happen. You sort of pick a plan and then, depending on where you fall, the Department of Health and Human Services puts you where sort of what you wanted, but it's not exactly what you bought, but it's better.
Now, I have to say, and I'll maybe insert my editorial opinion here a little bit, but why couldn't they have just, I mean, I know politically, but would it not make more sense to just have done a single-payer plan?
I agree that that's what should have happened. If nothing else, they could have just put a lot of people on Medicare, which is an already existing system, although it has its faults. The people who are on it are pretty happy they're on it. I think given the political environment and the, you know, the bias of the right, it was never going to happen in that way. The other issue, too, is what Obama did was kind of clever. He took the existing system and he sort of pushed it as far as it could be pushed without completely eliminating it. What I'm finding interesting is, you know, there are all these health insurance navigators and all these other people who are now involved in this process. I mean, every accountant in town probably has had to take classes because so much of it is tax stuff now. They don't know anything about insurance. You know, they understand the income part of it, but they don't understand how the actual product works. And how that's going to wash out in the long run is going to be interesting, I think. I can't make a judgment whether it's better or worse, so I'll just go with interesting.
Now, it's just about time to go, but basically, in the short run, what people need to know is by the end of this month, they need to, if they don't have insurance, they need to get insurance, otherwise they will be penalized on their taxes.
Yeah, if they don't have insurance or if they want to change what they have. There are a lot of advantages with the new plans, even though, in my opinion, they're overpriced and all that stuff. You know, the benefits aren't, you know, are more catastrophic as opposed to health care. You do get the benefit that it's guaranteed issue. There's, you know, they don't even ask the medical questions anymore. You do get the benefit that preventive care on all these plans is now free. So if all that you do is go get your annual,
your pap smear, all that stuff.
Yeah, it's designed to encourage you to do that. The other really big benefit is there are no lifetime maximums anymore, meaning you get yourself in what I call a Christopher Reeve situation, just because that's kind of the biggest public example I can think of. They can't cancel you or throw you off or tell you, oops, you've spent $1 million in 3 months, you can't have any more. They're not allowed to do that any longer. So if you're on an older version of a plan, you should look at that, you know, maybe consult with somebody to go over what the benefits are in comparison and think about changing. On the other hand, there are many people that I've met with that I just say, stay put and let's see how this works out in another year. It's all going to evolve as time goes on and as they get more information.
Edna Riley is an independent insurance broker, and she's been talking to us about the Affordable Care Act. If people want to get in touch with you, how do they do so?
The best way to reach me is by email. I am an independent person, and so I'm not sitting by the phone most of the time. My email is Edna, E-D-N-A, at benefitsnm.com, which is benefitsnm.com.
Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.